Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I'm Melody Hertzler, and today I have a really exciting set of guests here around our table. We have two physical therapists who are passionate about not only supporting patients in functional medicine, but also whole person health from the physical standpoint. So we're going to dig into that today. And so I'm just going to let them introduce themselves to start with. So we'll start with Becky Parr. Becky and I actually went to the same place for her undergrad while I was in pharmacy school. And our husbands knew each other from engineering school, so we're polar bears. So that's how we connected originally, but then reconnected here in the Dayton area. So Becky, tell us a little bit about your journey with PT and sort of how you got to where you are.
Sure. Thank you so much, Melody. So yes, I went to undergrad at Ohio Northern University. No polar bears. Then I went to the University of Dayton, similar as Kristen. I graduated and I entered into the workforce as an orthopedic physical therapist. I started working at an outpatient sports medicine clinic right after graduation. And this is kind of a funny story because they actually asked me if I would take the pelvic floor coursework to start a new service line for pelvic health. And I said, no, that is not something I am interested in. I am never going to be a pelvic floor therapist. I started orthopedics and that's what I'm going to be. You know, lo and behold, when you're like 23, you don't know what you're going to do with your life. I'd always loved research too, and I planned to get my PhD eventually. So something I always did as a physical therapist was I was up in the literature, up in PubMed, trying to figure out if I couldn't find an answer to something, I would try to look in my textbooks or look in the existing literature for answers. That's just a little bit of some backstory about me. In my clinic, it was a very heavy sports medicine clinic. We were in a YMCA. We were next to a running trail. All of the therapists were athletes. And so it really kind of spurred me on my athletic endeavors as well, too. So I renewed my love of running. I started doing half marathons and training for ultras and then full marathons. And then I got pregnant. So I was exercising about 2 hours a day. I was weightlifting. I was doing very long distance running. I think I ran like 60 miles one day, and then I was like, oh, I'm pregnant. Oh, what should I do? So I asked my OB provider about exercise scaling, and she's like, I don't know. You seem pretty fit. You're a physical therapist. What do you think you should do? Just don't like go scuba diving or fall off a bike. And I was like, okay, that's helpful. So being the giant nerd that I am, I started searching PubMed and was finding that there's really not a lot of research out there, or there wasn't like a decade ago, about what athletic females should do when they get pregnant. There's a lot of things like what not to do, and there's a lot of really old, outdated advice. So I really started reading a bunch of research articles, like I said, nerd that I am, and talking to pelvic health therapists and just trying to figure out, because I wanted to have a healthy pregnancy, but I wanted to retain my identity as an athlete. I wanted to compete if possible, but I also wanted to have a healthy pregnancy, and I didn't want to do anything that would, you know, impair me in the postpartum period. So I started taking classes, started taking APTA, like the pregnancy and postpartum realm. That's kind of where I started there. And then eventually got into taking the pelvic health coursework, like the internal pelvic health coursework. And I have realized that so many of my orthopedic clients had pelvic floor issues. And this was really fascinating to me because we use like the photo series in my clinic. It was like, I don't know what it's called, but like focused on therapeutic outcomes. And I always struggled with the hip patients. It's like, why are these hip patients not getting better? Everybody else is getting better. And they were usually like my older female patients that had hip issues. And then after I took all that pelvic floor coursework, I was like, oh, it's because they had pelvic floor dysfunction. So I started changing the way I did my physical therapy treatment. I started mentoring the other individuals within my clinic. And then I became that like go-to person to kind of do that bridge between the two. I started doing more talks for the American Physical Therapy Association Academy of Sports, as well as within my professional community about the relationship of pelvic floor dysfunction and orthopedic dysfunction, and also in female athletes. That's kind of my area of interest as well. In 2018, I entered a doctoral program, and my dissertation studied stress urinary incontinence in female collegiate athletes. During COVID, I got laid off from my hospital-based job, and my husband encouraged me. He said, you know, you've always kind of thought about starting your own program. Why don't you think about it now? And so COVID actually kind of helped me a little bit, because that's when I started my own like solo practice, my cash-based practice. So that was actually a good time for me getting laid off, and it gave me time to kind of think about things. And I was able to get a business plan together where I could merge my orthopedic and obstetric and pelvic expertise. I designed my evaluations to be 75 to 90 minutes long, which is double the allotted time in my prior hospital-based job. My goal was to really get to the root cause of the problem. I can use more of a holistic whole body approach. We talk about nutrition, we talk about stress management. You know, what are the things you need to do in your daily life? We screen orthopedics, we screen pelvic floor. I have great relationships with functional medicine providers, from registered dietitians, from psychologists, and so forth. And I've just been seeing really great outcomes. And so I'm so excited to be on this podcast and happy to answer any questions that you may have about me. And thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, great. Well, we'll dig into more of that as we talk. But Kristen, you want to give us a little intro about you and sort of how you got to owning your own practice as well?
Absolutely. Thanks, Melody. So my practice is physical therapy 212 in Troy, Ohio. We have the athletes on the podcast today. I'm a fellow runner like Becky. And I guess I'll say, to rewind and understand why I started my own practice, we'll probably start with why I got into physical therapy. I was a high-level high school and collegiate athlete, ran Division I at Xavier University. And like a lot of PTs, I got into physical therapy because I was injured a lot. And so I had a lot of oddball type injuries that aren't super common in running populations. In particular, in high school, I had a situation where when I would run long distances, race, my lower legs and feet would go completely numb when I would run. And it wasn't a super known condition. And so it kind of took us a while to get to the bottom of it. Turns out that it's something called compartment syndrome, where with exertion, with the miles, the nerves and blood vessels in your lower legs actually get compressed. And then that's what kind of turns off the sensation in your legs and feet. So I was basically racing without being able to feel my feet, which was problematic given that I had goals of continuing to compete at a high level. So we ended up finding a surgeon who finally knew something about it, had a very successful surgery. And then I got to PT afterwards. I even went to that surgeon's PT group, and the PTs had no idea how to rehab from this type of surgery. They'd never seen it before. They weren't sure what to do with it. They were a protocol-driven clinic. And so my physical therapist basically gave me a protocol for ACL rehab. And, you know, for those of you who might not be familiar with the ACL, it is a ligament in the knee. Again, I was having surgery on my lower legs for a nerve and artery issue, so we weren't quite in the same ballpark. So I was very frustrated by this. A lot of people get into PT because they have a great PT experience. And now that I have young athletes that I treat of my own, you know, I hope I can inspire them to be PTs because of a great experience. But unfortunately, I had the opposite happen, right? And so I saw this kind of one-size-fits-all model and realized that, you know, that wasn't going to work for me to recover. And so we went home from this. My dad was at the appointment with me. My dad does not have a background in healthcare. He's in business, but he's really good at researching. And this was in 2007. So it's not like there was Reddit or blogs or tons of information out there on the internet. But together, he and I dove in and created our own rehab for this surgery. And to kind of give you a timeline, surgery was at the end of the cross country season, which is in November. I need to be ready to go by track season in March. And I was ready to go. I was able to go on and compete very competitively that season. So That was really cool. And that was probably my first, you know, clue that maybe I need to go into PT. But again, what I saw out of PT was this protocol driven model. And so I thought, it's cool. But if I were to do it, you know, I would want to be able to treat people individually. You know, wouldn't that be so different if I were able to see each person who came in and treat them for their unique condition instead of just handing someone a protocol? So as life went on, God does a good job of putting things in your path to continue to lead you down that way. And so as I continue to go on and get injured and see this message again and again, you know that there is a way, PTs out there, and there's a way to create a model where you can respond to patients in that regard. You know, finally decided to become a physical therapist. Fast forward to my graduation day in 2017, I like to joke that like any good idea, it all started in a bar, right? Sitting there after graduation with a couple of my friends, you know, celebrating our hard work and really kind of thinking, hey, what are we going to do with our lives? And once again, you know, we all started and we all became PTs with stars in our eyes. But the reality of the model was that it wasn't always supportive of that. And so while I had really good clinical experiences, great clinical instructors, I saw a lot of problems with the traditional physical therapy model. And that was oftentimes due to, I'll say, you know, how physicians prescribed physical therapy or the parameters that ensured around physical therapy. Patients would sometimes show up to PT and not be motivated. So they would come in with this idea that, hey, I need 6 weeks of physical therapy so that way I can get an injection, get surgery, get an MRI. And so from day one, they're basically set up to fail physical therapy or just be a warm body in physical therapy so that way they can check the box to get to the next level, right? So we're over here as PTs saying, no, you can absolutely get better with PT, but the patient motivation isn't there, right? Because they just weren't set up for success from the model. The other issue is sometimes you would have patients who would come in and be super motivated, but they were capped by insurance. So insurance would say, hey, you only get 6 visits. Well, after 6 visits, they might be 60% better. They're on their way. We know they're going to get better. They know they're going to get better, but they've been capped by insurance or even maybe high deductible plans where that patient is seen for 2 weeks of physical therapy and then billed $3,000 later. You know, that's a lot for PT. And so I was just seeing that really, you know, insurance totally has a place in healthcare. When you have major surgeries, major conditions, I absolutely want health insurance, right? But for those of us who function in the middle, it was kind of just getting in the way. And so in expressing these concerns to my friends the night of graduation, they're like, yeah, we get it. And why don't you just create it if you don't see it out there? So this was 2017. And today, the cash PT model is super prevalent. Even in our area in Ohio, there's tons of clinics. At the time, there really wasn't. And certainly, you know, I practice in a more rural area. And there certainly wasn't in Troy or in the more rural areas in Ohio. And so I decided that's where I wanted to practice. That's how I wanted to practice. It was unconventional. I had tons of student debt, right, coming out of 3 years of grad school. But I went to my family. I went to my fiance, now husband, who's also a physical therapist. And I was like, hey, here's what I want to do. It's unconventional. It's not going to pay the bills at first, but can I have your support because I really believe in it? And to give them credit, they said, yes, absolutely. You know, here's how we can help. Here's how we can support you. And so we all dove in and now 8 years later, it's become a full-fledged clinic. I have a Pilates instructor who works with me. I have 2 fellow physical therapists who work with me. And one of those I can proudly say is my husband, you know, and to be able to put our eggs all into one basket and work together was a huge accomplishment a couple of years ago when we were finally able to do that. And so my model, like Becky's, I think like yours, Melody, is 100% cash-based. And so You know, I think all of your listeners are probably pretty familiar with that, where they just pay you directly. And to me, that solves a lot of the problems that I solve in particular with physical therapy and being limited by cost and limited by motivation or limited by number of visits. And it really does allow me to practice how I would like. It allows myself and the patient to have a conversation each time and say, hey, here's how I think you're doing. Here's how you think you're doing. Here's when I think we should follow up. Here's what we should do going forward. And they'll say, yeah, I agree. I disagree. You know, it's a conversation each time. And it really brings it down to myself and the patient instead of, you know, having outside input. And so it does allow for that space for more holistic care. And like Becky said, you know, taking care of the person and addressing all of those outside factors, controlling inflammation. So that way you can truly help them heal.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks so much. I love the entrepreneur journey as a fellow entrepreneur and just really finding like a lot of the life experiences, like you said, are reasons why we go into this. Like I went into functional medicine because I had my own health story and had to figure it out on my own or with other functional holistic providers. So I love that you use that to create this new model, and Becky as well. So let's shift gears and talking about how, like when you have like women, our population often is women in their 30s to 60s, which is probably very similar to a lot of the women that are coming into your guys' practice. What do you feel is like the most, I mean, I know Becky with a pelvic floor and like that's often a reason postpartum why women are maybe having pain, whether they're even struggling with low back pain and they don't realize that it's actually related to their pelvic floor. But talk to me about like some of the things that you're like, this is like the top two or top three things that we feel like women are not actually addressing with other types of PT that really are part of the healing plan, if that makes sense. So either of you can jump in.
Yeah. So I would say one of the factors that I fight regularly, Becky, I'll let you speak on the pelvic floor because I haven't been down that path yet with the female athlete. So you're going to be much more well-versed there. But one of the factors that I fight is inflammation. And I think that, you know, in the traditional physical therapy model, we're taught that it's all musculoskeletal. You know, someone should get better if you increase their strength, their flexibility, balance, et cetera, because those are their deficits. And sometimes you get to a point where it's just not making sense. They should absolutely be getting better and they're not. And a lot of that comes down to whole body inflammation. And so I think that's where outsourcing to providers like yourself, Melody, is super important because a lot of that inflammation is driven by dietary factors, is driven by hormonal factors. And on my end, it's being able to identify when that is an impeding factor to success in physical therapy and knowing when to refer out in those cases. Because I feel like particularly with women and for a variety of reasons, there's just a lot of underlying inflammation that we fight in order to either get better or get to a point, you know, where we're meeting some of those more high level orthopedic or athletic goals.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think women are, they're normally, and this is a generalization, but they're often a primary caregiver in their house, maybe spending 50% or more of time caring for children compared to whoever else's co-parenting. But then also the stress that we have when women are told we can do it all, right? We can be the mom, we can be the entrepreneur, we can be this. And it's like, well, really, can we give like 100% of our effort to all of those things, which obviously impacts our cortisol and our sleep and all of those things. So I think, and then, you know, a lot of times I see in the clinic women coming in when their, you know, kids are starting to go off to college or kids are finally like in high school or something because they've sort of ignored their health for, you know, a chunk of time, maybe even a decade or more, mm-hmm. Because they've been that caregiver working and cost of everything is increasing. So they're having to pick up part-time jobs or full-time jobs. So I think it is just, you know, a hard time. It's like we said, we want to be like known to be equals, but then it seems like we're also still with this like nature given role. And so that is hard to balance. So, and it's, you know, a challenge, I think, in all areas and aspects of medicine. But inflammation, certainly from, I mean, stress and nutrient depletions is something I find a lot, is that women are just deficient in a lot of nutrients. One, they've had the baby's gotten a lot of the nutrients, the breastfeeding journey, the stress component uses up a lot of nutrients because we're constantly in that fight or flight, and maybe even not digesting our food appropriately, though even we're nourishing ourselves with it. So many people come in and there's fatigue is like my number one like reason why people enter our practice. And so figuring out what all pieces of the puzzle that is really important. But it's interesting to hear you say that, you know, they're not getting better as they are doing the exercise, the muscle building. But it makes sense. Like if your body doesn't have proper mitochondrial function and you're not, you know, giving your cells the ability to produce energy, then that's obviously going to impact their ability to heal and build muscle too. So
yes. And sometimes it takes that third party, even though they know, hey, I'm run down, I'm tired, I don't feel like I can do that. Sometimes it takes that third party acknowledging what you just said. And yeah, you can't give 100% to everything. You know, I've heard it said that there's no such thing as work-life balance. There's a work-life continuum, you know, where it's sometimes work takes up more, sometimes life takes up more. And you're right. Oftentimes we see women where, you know, their kids are now independent or they're leaving the house and they go, hey, wait, where did those 15, 18, 20 years go, you know, of not nourishing myself and not doing things for myself, you know?
Yeah. And I think there's things in social media too that say, oh, you know, women, you should be able to do it all. You should be able to do everything a stay-at-home mom can do, but also you should be able to work full-time, and your house should be clean, and your kids need to be eating, you know, 3 solid nutrient-packed meals a day, and also they need to do like 17 activities each. And that's just not possible. But I do feel, I know it's probably outside the scope of this podcast, but I do feel like social media just paints this unrealistic picture for a lot of our patients and clients. And so they'll just be like, well, I have to get through this. You know, Susie Q does this. Why can I not do this? Like, I need to do this too. And I see a lot of patients coming in that are just so chronically overexerted as well. But one thing about my practice too that's interesting is, so I started it during COVID, and I started doing home visits. And I thought, oh, this will taper off. And I actually got an in-person location in, let's see, 2022. There was still such a demand for the in-person care. And people said, you know, I won't be able to come to the clinic. Like, the only way I'm able to get care is if you come to my house, because I have like 4 kids. I don't want to bundle up all my kids. Like, we can do it during nap time, or like I can sit and feed the baby if I need to. And I realized that by offering these home visits, it was really decreasing that barrier to care. Working in the outpatient clinic before, we always had like such a high no-show cancel rate for our postpartum individuals or individuals with young children. As you can imagine, kids are getting sick, you know, like they're super late because their kid doesn't want to put their coat on. And, you know, going to individuals' houses, it was helping reduce some of those barriers to care, and then having those longer appointment times too. So honestly, there are some structural barriers to care in when you're a new parent, or if you have young children at home, it can be a lot easier. And that's why I think a lot of people are off getting care until they're at school. So they just don't have to deal with it, because if you are burnt out, that is just one more thing that you have to do in your day, and it's exhausting. And I have 2 children, so I know.
Yeah. I know. I also have 2 children. And then sometimes I'm looking at these women with like 4 or 5 children. I'm like, oh my goodness, how do you do that? Like, I would love more fun personalities in my house, but I just don't know that that's manageable in this life. Mm-hmm. So Becky, talk to us about pelvic floor and women's health. Like, personally, I realized at 6 months postpartum that something was going on with my pelvic floor, and reached out to my OB and said, hey, like, can I have a referral to pelvic floor therapy? But it took me scrolling on social media, like trying to figure out like, what are these symptoms? Why is this happening? Like, obviously the low hormones postpartum like affects some of your pelvic function as well, in general, urinary stuff. But So tell us about, like, I mean, every, in my mind, every female that has a baby, everybody that has a baby should be offered pelvic floor therapy. It should be a discussion with their OB at their, you know, last couple appointments, or even during pregnancy should be introduced, probably some things to help even support the pelvic floor while they're pregnant. So talk to us about your approach with that, and like what you tell women and what symptoms people might be experiencing that are actually related to pelvic floor dysfunction.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, that's so open-ended. So there's a lot of things going on in healthcare. So pelvic floor therapy is a little bit newer than like overall physical therapy. And if you have an older OB-GYN, they may not have really any education on what pelvic floor physical therapy is. And I found that there's still not a great knowledge of what pelvic floor therapists do. A lot of the OB-GYNs, what I tell my patients is, their job is to make sure that you have a safe and healthy pregnancy and that you're not having any tissue healing issues, like no infections. If there's no infections, they don't really know what to do with you. So some of the newer physicians and those who have sought additional information are now getting a little bit more aware of what pelvic floor therapists can do. So we're starting to see more folks. But symptoms of, there's genitourinary syndrome of menopause. And so the decreased estrogen can lead to just a lot of different factors. You have decreasing strength, which is overall like sarcopenia, but also strategically affects the pelvic floor as well. So you may start having like some bladder issues, bowel issues. Maybe you're just starting to leak some gas or leak a little bit of urine exertion. There can be thinning of the bar tissue as well. There can be itching. Just different symptoms like that where people think, oh, it's an infection, or you may be more prone to get urinary tract infections. And this is really due more to the diminished hormonal supply during menopause. These same things can happen in postpartum as well. So there's really a new terminology of like postpartum syndrome, or what was it, genitourinary syndrome of postpartum now too, because you're at a very similar hormonal state when you are postpartum and breastfeeding as you are when you're in that like perimenopausal area. I think a lot of physicians, so in perimenopause, we all know that there's really not a lot of good support there. They're like, oh, you could do HRT, you could not. That's all you can really do. But there's a lot of different other things that you can do in pelvic floor physical therapy. Like research has indicated that by doing pelvic floor muscle training, you can improve a lot of your symptoms in that way, just by doing some muscle training, which is kind of like Kegels. We don't want to call it Kegels, because just like with any other muscle training, there's a specified like number of muscular contractions, like hold times, intensities, and so forth. So we can do pelvic floor muscle training in both, you know, menopausal, perimenopausal, postpartum, pregnancy, all kinds of different areas. Okay, so that's one modality we can use. We can also use biofeedback too, where there's like electrodes, we hook you up to the machine, and we ask you to contract pelvic floor musculature. Sometimes muscles are uncoordinated, and so we can work in pelvic floor physical therapy to work on a lot of that coordination of those muscular response systems. So sometimes, for example, if people are constipated and we've identified that it's not a nutrition or a fiber issue and they're drinking enough water, it can actually, one of the biggest things is due to incoordination of some of those posterior pelvic floor muscles that are looping around the rectum. And we actually have to work more on like down training the nervous system, then also on working on eccentric lengthening of those tissues so that they're able to get a little bit longer and unkink the rectum to allow for bowel evacuation. So that's another thing that we do that I feel like people are like, you work in constipation? Like, yes, that should be like first line of treatment. Like we talk about diet, we talk about water, fiber is important, but a lot of times it can be due to a muscular issue itself. So that's another kind of fun thing that we get to do. Like I mentioned before, like nutrition is really important. Talking with really anybody about like, what are your macronutrients looking like? Are you meeting the necessary RDA guidelines? What are your micronutrients looking like? If things are looking really low, if they don't have a good balanced diet, we'll want to refer on to a registered dietitian. If they're just feeling overall symptoms that are not improving with nutrition, that's when we would definitely want to send them on to functional medicine as well. But to clarify, the biggest conditions I tend to see in my practice are more like urinary incontinence issues, which is really any release of unwanted urine. So even if it's like a couple drops of urine as you're playing volleyball or as you sprint across the street to save your children, like that still counts. That still counts because it's unwanted leakage. So we see, you know, urinary frequency, a lot of urgency. People should not be getting up at night to urinate unless they're 65. So if you're seeing a lot of like those nighttime episodes, that could be an indication that we have some pelvic floor dysfunction going on. Pelvic pain, that's a big one postpartum too. You know, you remember the first time you had sexual intercourse after you had a baby? That was rough. Well, for some people, that pain tends to persist, and it can be due to some increased tone, really tight pelvic floor muscles. And some of it can be due to that like fear and guarding response. But there's a lot of things we can do in pelvic floor physical therapy to work on improving that coordination, that down training, that muscle relaxation, and so forth. So things like that. And then once again, I mentioned the constant. We work a lot with diastasis recti. You know, low back pain and hip pain are very common in females as well. Let's see, pelvic organ prolapse. So that's another fun one that tends to rear up a little closer to perimenopause, or can be right after having a baby, when your tissues are a little bit more lax. That is very scary for people to feel like their organs are falling out of their body. And so we provide a lot of education. Like I'll provide a lot of education on what it is. I show people diagrams and we talk about like how to manage that. Sometimes I do work with a medical provider with a pessary fitting, and that's another option. So some physical therapists do the pessary fittings themselves. But the thing is with the pessaries, you have to manage them through the years too. So you'll need like a 6-month check and then a 1-year check just to make sure that we're not having any like vaginal wall breakdown, no infection and so forth. So that's not something that that's not something I do in my practice, but I know several other pelvic floor physical therapists are doing. And that's a little bit newer in our wheelhouse as of the last couple of years.
Awesome. Can you explain what that is? I'm not familiar with the pessary.
Yeah, sure. So I like to call it like an ankle brace for your pelvic organs or like a sports bra for your pelvic organs. So if your pelvic organs are having some descent, what it's doing is it's trying to take up the slack. So you insert a device. So a lot of times people will try to do this themselves just by like wearing tampons, but they're not on their menstrual cycle. But it's essentially like a silicone device, like a cube or a ring. There's different types. And then you would insert it in the vaginal cavity. And most of the time they can stay up there for a period of time. Your provider will give you a set period, you know, like if this one has to be removed daily, this one has to be removed every 3 months. It just depends on the type of device it is. And it's providing a static restraint against those pelvic organs falling further. So if you have pelvic organ prolapse, that is something that we can use. So especially and that's something that I actually used and asked for with my first pregnancy, is because I had pushed for 2 hours. Those muscles went kaput. I wanted to get back to running. Everything was good to go in terms of return to run, except I was having pelvic heaviness symptoms. So I talked with my OB-GYN. I got a pessary, and then I would just use the pessary while I ran, and then I would take it out. And then that allowed me to return to my activity while I continued my physical therapy and got stronger. And eventually I was able to discharge that. So she was like, we don't get pessaries for this. And I was like, you know, you can. And she's like, wow, this is crazy. We normally only give them out in like menopause. I was like, well, this is also like menopause, you know, having a baby when you don't have the good, you know, hormones, keeping your muscles nice and strong. If you have a levator ani avulsion, or you're working on if you had some significant tearing, it can really provide that static restraint. And it's just holding those organs up and making sure that you're not causing like further damage, like from further stretching as you're like bouncing, you know, in your body as you're doing high impact activities like running or jumping. And they're fairly cheap. It just requires just a little bit of some extra care from the provider. There are different pessaries. So especially in like the older population, that's more menopausal related, where they can keep them in for a set period of time. And then you just have to take them out for cleaning, but you could still have sexual intercourse. Like they're high enough up there. They're just holding the organs up, and you just want to make sure you're cleaning them periodically to prevent infection. Does that help explain it a little
yes,
bit more?
Yes, perfect. Thank you. It's super interesting because I think so many women think that they are like, it's normal to like have urinary leakage when you bounce on a trampoline or when you laugh or when you work out or you sneeze like or cough or something like that. So I think it's, you know, important that women know like this is not normal, whether you're 30 or you're 75, like this can, you know, type of therapy can be helpful for you. And I loved when I did pelvic floor therapy and had diastasis, there was an ultrasound that they used and like showed me like how I was like contracting my ab muscles and like how I needed to feel that, you know, tiny movement. Cause I think so often we're like, oh, we got to do crunches, right? Or we got to do this, but like that could be like worsening the situation. But when you can see like actually what's happening in on the screen, you're like, oh, well, this is what I need to do to build that muscle. So yeah. It's
so that's
all
like real-time ultrasound, and that would be considered biofeedback. Because that's something that you do in physical therapy for sure.
Yeah.
You can do transperineal ultrasounds as well too to see how the pelvic floor muscles are working as well. Or you can do transabdominal. It just kind of depends on like what exactly you're looking for. But that's another very useful adjunct of things that we can do in pelvic floor physical therapy.
Awesome. So real quick, before we transition to more of an overall female athlete conversation, what do you think about the pelvic floor and the menstrual cups? Because I feel like I've seen like these things online recently that are like, oh, this is damaging your pelvic floor, blah, blah, blah. But then there's other women that are like, these are amazing because, you know, it's less toxins. It's, you know, easier to deal with. Like you can put it for a whole half a day. You're not bleeding through multiple tampons. So is there any opinion from PT on if those are harmful or safe, or does it depend on if you have a healthy pelvic floor or not?
Yeah, I don't know that it necessarily depends on if you have a healthy pelvic floor or not. It's just if you know how to put it in correctly. And it's like, I am not everybody, whoever's listening, you're a pelvic floor therapist. And this is not the opinion of the Academy of Pelvic Health. However, in my personal opinion, if you're able to put it in correctly, it should be okay. As long as you're cleaning it correctly, you're inserting it correctly, you're not leaving it in for too long. The big issue is when you are pulling it out and you're leaving the suction. That could be damaging. So think about like you have to release the suction and then pull it out. If you keep the suction, you're like pulling a plunger down on those pelvic organs. So that's not good. If you do it correctly, I don't see any reason why you shouldn't be able to use them.
Okay, cool. Just curious. I feel like that's been life-changing for me. those tools that we did not have when we were teenagers, which I don't know if we would have wanted to insert them like, you know, as teenagers, because after you have babies, you're just like, oh, it's like that super easy. But before that probably would have been more challenging. I think about like, you know, had the period conversation with my daughter and like was explaining to her all the different things. And she's like, what? Like that would probably be hard at this age, but for her. Okay, so let's transition to female athletes. You guys are both female athletes, PTs. Like, what advice do you guys have for people that are trying to stay active? And, you know, what should be like a sign that I need to explore physical therapy to like either become a better athlete or to maintain or to, you know, prevent injury? Like, what does that look like?
I'm of the opinion that if you're an athlete, you're a person, right, who does anything active, which is everyone, should probably see a physical therapist, because it's really in all of those sneaky spots that we see things show up. And so Becky talked about, you know, diastasis recti and the pelvic floor dysfunction and incontinence. And it's very much the same with all of the other stabilizer muscles in the body. So as physical therapist, you know, know that you can do great things and big movements, lift kids all day long, lift heavy weights, run marathons. But are you being supported by those smaller muscles? And it's really when those smaller muscles fail or do not show up as they should is when dysfunction comes into play. And so, you know, if you think about CrossFit athletes, they might be able to lift high weights and do a lot of reps. But when you get to fatigue, are they able to push beyond that, or does it come to a situation of failure? And if it's becoming a situation of failure and breakdown of body mechanics that could eventually do injury, it's probably because something small isn't doing their job. So, you know, if you think of a CrossFit athlete doing a bunch of snatches, what's going on in their shoulder blades? What's going on in their mid-back? you know, where, what are those stabilizer muscles doing? Talk a lot about runners, you know, when you're at high speeds or long distances, you know, is everything firing as it should? Or are those small muscles in the feet, are the small muscles in the hip doing what they should do, right? And so I think, you know, because humans are active by nature, you know, in whatever position you are along that line, you know, I think as we get older, particularly as women, muscle mass decreases. And a lot of that is hormonally driven, as you talked about, and some of it is lifestyle as well. And so I think that, you know, it's reasonable to say that you should check in with a PT like you would check in with a dentist, like you would check in with primary care, right? And so that we can discover if there are any inefficiencies and something that could break down under load over time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. The American Physical Therapy Association actually recommends an annual visit by a physical therapist. And that's exactly what Kristen is mentioning. Just, we have so many screens. We can do like a functional movement screen, just different screens for athletes. And so I teach a health promotion fitness management course in a doctor of physical therapy program. And we teach all of our DPT students like how to work with athletes. So that's kind of a little bit unique about my program. But we specifically teach these screens. And then we teach, like, they may not be coming in for a so-called injury, but these are injury reduction plans. And so having a physical therapist as a member of like the collegiate healthcare team or the high school team, or just even, you know, like my running club, I am the physical therapist essentially for my running club. They're like, hey, Becky, I have this thing going on. Will you take a look at how I run? So I do running gait analyses in my clinical practice too. And then we'll just banter and I'll do some screens and be like, okay, this is what I think you have going on. Like, you're not an injury yet, but like that's saving so many healthcare dollars by getting like one visit, one screen by a physical therapist. Some things specific to pelvic health too, like what Kristen mentioned, like you're lifting really heavy. Well, if you're lifting really heavy, and so you see all the CrossFit athletes who are maxing out and peeing, that is a sign that there is something wrong with their pressure management. So you should not be peeing at high exertion. So that is something also that has come through in the media. That's just like, that's a sign that you're pushing hard. That is not good for your body. So that is a sign your body cannot manage your intra-abdominal pressure appropriately. So if you are feeling like pelvic heaviness, prolapse, if you are urinating, even if it's a couple drops when you're pushing heavy, doing your sport, if you're noticing like some coning or doming in your abdomen, if you're like, oh, I didn't know I had diastasis. Well, it's just with specific movements. Those are signs that your body is not strong enough or that you are not managing your pressure well enough. And I have worked with individuals with stress urinary incontinence who are peeing when they're doing specific things like in CrossFit or weightlifting or in running, and we tweak the movement pattern and 2-3 sessions later, they're completely fine. It's like they're completely cured, right? Like they have not had enough time to massively improve their strength, but they are changing their pressure management strategies or changing how their body is moving. And then they're no longer having that issue. So I don't think people need to be scared of physical therapists. Like you don't have to go if you're having major issues. Like maybe you just have this minor issue that you just want tweaked, or you're like, you know, I do just leak a couple drops, or I have back pain when I deadlift. That's the only thing that bothers me. And we can change your lifting strategy. Like, what are you doing? Oh, I think we need to change the angle of your lifting here. Like, you know, take you down 10 pounds, get your glutes back a little bit more and get them firing. And then go, you're good to go. So I think physical therapists are a very under-recognized member of the healthcare team and can really do so much to help prevent injury. And really, we're just used more as rehabilitation individuals, but we need to be used more for the prevention of injury.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably, you know, my favorite realm to work in, right? And I think that, you know, we've been working hard to kind of change that idea that you can see us first, right, before anything starts to hurt. And so absolutely, you know, there's this idea that throughout the lifespan, you like you said, Becky, well, hey, it's okay to pee while I'm doing this. I'm working hard, or oh, you know, it's okay. Runners get knee pain as they get older, and those aren't okay. You know, age, you know, should not be a reason why those things bother you. You can exercise and you can meet goals and you can, you know, do your daily activities as you age, and you should be able to do them feeling good, feeling energized and without pain and without a breakdown of your body. And so that shouldn't be a badge of honor as you age, right? The badge of honor is being able to feel good and being able to do them efficiently and at a high level.
Awesome. Well, any specific advice? I know we've had a great conversation and we're coming up on almost 50 minutes in. So just to wrap it up, any specific advice for athletes or women in regards to like things to consider during their training or how to even find a physical therapist that thinks like you guys? Obviously, if they're in Ohio, they can find you. It's in Dayton metro area, but we do have listeners all over the country. So how do they find someone like you?
Yes, I have family in a lot of different places. And so I'm always asked that question, like, hey, I'd love to come to you, but I can't. Like, I get it. And really, you know, what I'm looking for them when I'm trying to find them someone in their area is someone who is practicing cash-based physical therapy. Because I know that PT, while they might not think exactly like me or do exactly what I would do, again, I know they have that flexibility to be able to treat that person individually. And so first and foremost, I would start there and say, you know, who can you go to in your area that you can just pay cash for, right? Because when we talk a lot about this prevention component and seeing PTs as primary care, that is something that if we're going back to the traditional model of insurance, that insurance doesn't cover. And so if you want to see your PT for a checkup or if you want to see your PT for something that's just nagging a little bit but isn't a full-blown injury, you're going to need to see someone that you pay cash for anyway because traditional insurance is not going to cover that. So that's first and foremost is what I'm looking for them when I'm trying to find them in a PT in the area. And secondly, and I'm certainly biased towards this, you know, Becky and I both as graduates of the University of Dayton, we're probably biased towards manual therapy, right? Because they hit it pretty hard there. But what I mean by manual therapy is a lot of hands-on work, right? You're touching the patient, you know, you're not just kind of hands-off, stepping back, you know, directing the traffic, right? And so I'm usually looking for a bias towards manual therapy as well. And then finally, a bias towards exercise and performance, because again, I believe that everyone is an athlete somewhere along the continuum. And so I want my PTs out there for anyone that I know to view them as an athlete, no matter what their age, no matter what their goals are. You know, I want them to look at them like, hey, you have something big to achieve in life. And so those are probably the top three things that I look at. And so for the viewers out there who are in other parts of the country and need to see a PT, you know, I would start with that for sure.
Yeah, I like the APTA find a PT locator, and I can send you a link to that, Melody. But I would send that to your friend or your family member and then tell them, okay, find somebody in your area, but then call the clinic and ask to speak to them and hear about their treatment philosophy and then ask them what their experience is in treating athletes. So I referred my brother-in-law to a therapist and because they said they treated athletes, but he was a very high level runner and they didn't know how to work with him. And the advice he was getting was not the best. And so I have learned from experience, like you have to really, you know, ask what kind of athletes, like, is this a volleyball athlete? You need to make sure that they have experience in volleyball athletes. The biomechanics of sports are very different. So ask them what their experience is in treating athletes. I mean, whether it's elite or recreational. I mean, I tell my people in my running club who run like 12-minute miles, I'm like, it doesn't matter. You're still an athlete. You know, you're a runner. Like you run half marathons. It really doesn't matter if you run it at a 6-minute pace or a 12-minute pace. Like you're still going through the demands of the sport. And also there's greater time on the ground, so you're probably more likely to get hurt. So you definitely need somebody on your healthcare team. So those are some of my top pieces of advice. Find the PT locator, try to read the therapist's bio. And then if you're able to talk with the therapist, if not the clinic director, just talk to somebody and find out what their experience level is. And I would say you don't necessarily have to seek out a cash-based provider. There are definitely amazing providers that are within the insurance system. But like what Kristen's talking about, like if you're a cash-based provider, like you generally are kind of like an out-of-the-box thinker and you're really good. So you don't have to take insurance. So there's that. If you're able to get cash-based, you know, it's generally somebody who is, you know, who wants the flexibility, who wants to have the hour-long sessions, who's taken lots of continuing education, and will certainly be able to help you.
And I would say to make sure, you know, it going back to your point about having a conversation with them beforehand, make sure that your PT is willing to meet you where you're at, because I believe that it's our job as PTs to support someone's goal. You know, someone could tell me that they're about to do an Ironman, and I would say, great, here's how we're going to help you do an Ironman. And if your PT looks at you and goes, there's no reason to ever do that amount of work, you know, there's no, we don't need to put our body through that, that's the wrong PT for you, right? And so making sure that your PT is someone who's ready to get on board with your goals and say, yep, absolutely. And here's how I'm going to get you there.
Yeah. I laugh because I have a type 1 patient that loves to do Ironmans, and it's like a hot mess every time because he's like just like up and down. Like when I first met him, he was like taking off his pump while he would swim and then putting back on while like he was doing the, because he didn't want to lose the pump in like the open lake or whatever. And then, you know, so all these things. But so now that he's done a little less of those, we have better control. So I was the person that was like, are you sure you want to keep doing this?
But you did. You supported them.
Yes.
And I don't think there's anything wrong in questioning, especially if there's like a safety issue. And I think that is a mark of PT. Like not just going out and saying, oh yeah, I'll support you no matter what, but offering them, okay, like this could happen. You know, like these are the risks. Are you sure you want to get to those risks? Okay. Well, I will help you the best of my ability to get you there safely.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for your time today. I really appreciate you guys just sharing a little bit about your journey and helping introduce more of our listeners to physical therapy, because I do think that most of America thinks it's just somewhere you go after a surgery or after getting hurt. So this conversation of like physical therapy being part of your wellness plan, I think is super important. So again, thank you for joining, and we will share both of their practices in the show notes, as well as Becky will send me that link for if you're not in the Dayton area and want to find a practitioner, a PT therapist in your area. So that's all for this episode of Table Talk. Again, thanks for listening.
Thanks, Melody.